Welcome to the Balance Bites podcast with Diane Sanfilippo and Liz Wolf. Diane is a New York Times bestselling author of Practical Paleo, The 21-Day Sugar Detox, and co-author of Mediterranean Paleo Cooking. Liz is the best-selling author of Eat the Yolks and The Skintervention Guide. Together, Diane and Liz answer your questions, interview leading health and wellness experts, and share their take on modern paleo living with their signature-friendly and balanced approach. Remember our disclaimer, the materials and content within this podcast are intended as general information only and are not to be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Hey everyone, Liz here, Diane there.
Hey.
Welcome to episode 175 of the Balanced Bites podcast. This week we've got some awesome topics in store for you all, from a little Chipotle talk and tips for first-time CrossFitters, bulletproof coffee, and more. Pete's Paleo is a friend of the Balance Bites podcast, and they also are fans of the 21-Day Sugar Detox. The 21-Day Sugar Detox is great for your body in so many ways, but consistently feeding yourself right can be a challenge. Pete's Paleo makes delicious, seasonal, ready-to-eat meals that strictly follow the 21-DSD program. They're shipped directly to your door, ready to go. Let Pete's Paleo help you with your 21-DSD success, and don't forget that their bacon is also sugar-free. 5 off 21DSD is your coupon code for $5 off 21DSD meals, and 5 off Pete's Paleo is your coupon code for $5 off regular Pete's Paleo meals. So Diane, what's going on with you? What's happening in Diane Land?
In New Jersey, where
that
it's
would be a fun
freezing
amusement park.
Diane Land?
Yeah.
What would Diane Land
explosion
be made
of rainbows out of your brain?
And bacon and
ideas and bacon.
Ideas and bacon, mostly. Let's see. So I think I'm always trying to figure out when we're recording and when these episodes are going live. So as of the time that this recording will air, I'll be in Salt Lake City Friday the 23rd. So that's tomorrow if you're listening live. And that's at 7 p.m. at Sugar House Barnes & Noble. So come join me there. It'll be a really fun time. I think we're going to have a really nice group of folks there. So I think that'll be fun. And then I'll be at Sundance. So if you're at Sundance Film Festival and you think you see me with my sunglasses and fuzzy hat and Uggs or something, and you're like, is it her or is it Zoe Deschanel? It's me. I'm just kidding.
She's pregnant. Did you hear, Zoe?
Oh, gosh. So then
she's
you
such
can't
a copycat.
Confuse us. She's got me and you.
Yeah.
Oh, so are we going to have to watch New Girl where they're trying to hide the bump eye roll? Like, we can't tell
so.
That someone has a bump?
I think it'll be, like, I think it's timed well. It appears to me that it's timed well. Did you watch last night, by the way?
I didn't.
Okay. I won't say anything then.
It.
Sigh. What else? What else is going on?
That's really it. I mean, so many things going on, but I think that's all I have to update people on for now. What about you? What's new with you?
I don't know. I forgot to think about that before we got on. Shoot, man.
What about the baby program?
That, I mean, that's a little ways off. You can go to babymakingandbeyond.com and enter your email in there to get updates. But what I've been working on with Meg, the midwife, is to get together some good like fertility tips and some basic questions that we both get a lot to patch in to the Balanced Bites podcast while I am on maternity leave, which I'm thinking about calling baby break just because it's, but then that just, it's kind of like the store Bye Bye Baby, which I refuse to go into because it just sounds like weirdly terrible.
Like you're going to buy babies? Sounds
not,
like you're going to buy
babies. You're either
going
to buy a baby or you're going to leave your baby there. Like Bye Bye Baby. I'm sick of you.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Something like that. And so I'm uncomfortable with that, but yeah, I need like a creative name for maternity leave because maternity leave sounds stupid.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure I approve this maternity leave because
yeah.
I'm kind of bummed out that you won't be with me, but I think we'll be able to.
I forged your signature on my official Balance Bites podcast maternity leave documentation.
That's amazing. I'm going to check with my project manager on that one and verify that. No, it'll be good. We'll have some tips from you spliced in, and I'm sure I'll be able to rope you in at some point while you're on the break, or we're going to have a bunch of episodes, I think, stockpiled, so folks won't miss you too much, and we'll get a bunch of awesome guests, and I'll probably get a guest co-host, so that'll be really fun, too, to just have a little change of pace for a bit.
Yeah.
And then I'll be happy to have you back when you're ready.
And then they can miss me. And
then we'll hear you
see each other less, and we'll miss each other more. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have the boob out. I'll be, you know, all that stuff when I get back. But we haven't decided yet if we're going to do a live feed from the delivery room. But I'm thinking no.
Thank you.
We went to birthing class last night. Oh man. I mean, what a world! What a state the world of fertility and maternity is. It's just, I'm just really excited to do baby making beyond, and just, I don't know, maybe even license it to midwifery clinics, holistic birth centers, things like that, because there are just not a whole lot of materials available to forward thinking practitioners, if I may say that.
I know a bunch of women. There were some in my nutrition consulting class many years ago, at least one who was a midwife, and she probably has a bunch of midwife friends who would totally be into that, very into the holistic approach. And yeah, we can share it around to lots of people. It'd be great.
That's awesome. And Pete, a couple of folks have reached out. I've been in also contact with, you put me in contact actually with, I'm going to give her the Instagram handle, Rosie the Reviver. Mm-hmm. And she's fabulous. We've had some people reach out. There's a midwife, I believe, that I met in Chicago. I mean, we've had people reach out like, hey, you know, if there's anything that you need or that we can do to contribute to the program, please let me know. And that's really exciting to me. That's awesome. And I think I'm trying to figure out a way that people could kind of jump on and be a part of, at the very least, the launch. I mean, you know, you have those summits and stuff like that where they provide all these interviews and videos with people. And, you know, maybe there's room for folks to share their expertise that way and kind of roll out a whole big bonus package of all kinds of different experts, putting their two cents in. I think that would be really neat in addition to the core curriculum. So it's going to be really cool, and it's going to be really collaborative, not just between myself and Meg, but the whole community, really, I think.
Yay. It's needed. It's very needed. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So we have a little shout out for our friends, Bill and Haley of the Food Lovers, for Make It Paleo 2.
Which was jokingly called, before it was officially titled, it was called Make It Paleo-er. Make It Paleo-er. Yeah, I'm so excited for them and really proud of them. These two have cranked out 4 books since this whole thing started. I think their first book came out in, I want to say it was October of 2011, and that was the second time I ever spent time with them. When I first met them was, I think it was July or August of that same year. We didn't get to meet you and I at the AHS Diddy out in LA. That's when I first met Bill and Haley. And I remember you were trying to get out there, and I think your flight got canceled or something crazy happened.
It got canceled, and then I gave up.
And then you were like, okay, thanks, bye.
Philly to Los Angeles, I don't think so.
Yeah, the first time I met them was July or August of 2011, and their book had come out just a few months later, and I went down to Pittsburgh to help them celebrate that, and that was really fun. And, you know, it was kind of my first, you know, bonding with them as friends. And after hanging out with them working on Practical Paleo, folks don't know, Bill Staley actually shot all the pictures for that. Haley shot a handful of them as well and just kind of helped out with all of that on the recipes. And so I know what they put into their work, into their recipes, into the photos. And, you know, if you guys have loved all the cookbooks that have come out so far, literally every time these two put out a book, it's like, okay, everybody, go back to the drawing board. Forget what you were doing, because now it's pretty much mediocre because they just upped the game. Couple of the things that I love about the book, I mean, I don't have one in my hands, but I got to see just kind of a quick preview of the content before it went to print, because I got to give a little quote for the cover there. It's pretty full of nutrient dense recipes. So I know that Haley's sister, Caitlin, she works as a professional chef in some capacity. I can't remember exactly if she's like a sous chef or what, you know, what type of job she
has
right now.
I thought it was sushi, but I, you know, sushi.
Yeah. And I don't know if she still does that now. I know she was doing it for a while. So they're, you know, creating broths with kombu and different types of nutrient dense just recipes that we haven't really seen a lot in paleo. We've definitely seen a ton of just super simple stuff. And what they do is always simple from the perspective of, you know, not overcomplicating the ingredients, not overcomplicating the steps, but really kind of taking people's skill level from, you know, just incorporating one or two new ingredients that are really special or one or two new techniques that people can learn. I know they have like a hand pie recipe, maybe an empanada, and then also a sweet one. Things like that, that, you know, once you've gone through so many of these other paleo cookbooks and my own included, it's just, you know, you're ready for something a little different. So they've really kind of stepped it up and they've got a few food projects in there as well. So things like, you know, making your own ginger beer, I think, and a couple of other goodies. So anyway, I'm really excited. I can't wait to get a copy and see it. Hopefully that'll be coming over here pretty soon. And so, yeah, we just wanted to shout out to them and say congratulations. We're really excited for you guys on your second in that Make It Paleo series, and everyone should go check it out. It's available for pre-order on Amazon now, and I believe it releases February 17th, so it's a perfect Valentine's Day gift. And
yes,
if I can predict things pretty well, it's possible that they might have some kind of little card or something if you wanted to give it to somebody for Valentine's Day. But it could be like, hey, can I like print out this little card that says it's coming in 2 days?
They'll probably
do something cool like that. And if not, you can probably nudge Bill and ask him to, and he would whip it up in about 30 seconds for you.
So love it.
Yeah, great gift for Valentine's Day.
Support for this podcast is provided by Dragonfly Traditions, natural, nourishing skincare with absolutely no unnecessary chemicals. It's natural nutrition for the skin. I am a huge fan of Dragonfly, from their serum to their night cream and everything else the owner Phoebe has created. Your skin will be soft and happy with Dragonfly Traditions. If you head over to dragonflytraditions.com and make a purchase of one or more of their skincare products, you can then add Balanced Bites to your shopping cart for one penny. Phoebe will then not only send you 2 free lip balms with your order, she'll also send you that penny back. Remember, that's 2 free lip balms with purchase from Dragonfly Traditions. All right, so this week, and this may be, by the time this airs, it's probably circulated a bit, so it may be more like last week in the paleo sphere.
I feel like we should say that every week. And last week.
In the recent weeks in the paleo sphere.
If you haven't logged in to the internet.
Oh, man. Remember the days when you like rushed into the house and chained yourself to the desktop and logged into Prodigy, and it was like, oh, man. The world was better with a lot less internet,
or
I'm just going
like
to say.
A Unix, Linux, green screen thing, and it was like mothra.syr.edu, something weird like
that's
that.
A little ahead of my time.
Oh, yeah. I'm a handful of years older than you. So,
we had
yeah.
Lotus Works and, you know, yeah.
We were logging into mainframe screens to check our email, and it was janky. Anywho,
I miss the days when people couldn't just screenshot my picture and write mean things across my face. No, that's Perez Hilton. Never mind. Okay.
I do that all the time.
I know you do. You're so mean. All right. So last week in the paleosphere, so Chipotle has stopped serving pork at hundreds of restaurants because they discovered during a routine inspection that the conditions in which the pigs were raised was not up to their standards. Personally, I think a lot of folks know that the carnitas, which is like the shredded pork at Chipotle, is like the safe meat, not necessarily because it's like pasture raised and comes from a happy pig that's been obnoxious in my back pasture for forever, but it's because it doesn't have soybean oil in it. So I don't know if people have been ordering the carnitas because they think it's pasture raised. I think Chipotle does hold their meat producers and their dairy producers to a higher standard, which is great. But to this point, I don't entirely know what that standard is. So I thought we should talk about Chipotle a little bit today.
Can I tell you something? Whenever I see the word Chipotle, I have to think of the way my mom says it, which is chipoodle. She just chipoodly doodly. She can't. She
chipoodle.
Can't, she always. I think she
not
says
even
it,
chipotle. Chipoodle.
She says chipoodle. I think she says it right now because I was
Marge.
Like, Marge. Like, she has a thing for saying the words wrong, like Tommy Hilfiger and chipoodle. And I was like, Mom, it's Chipotle.
Abercrombie and Finch.
Yeah, something like that. Exactly. Anyway, so chipoodle.
Well, a lot of people say Chipotle.
Oh, yeah. Also incorrect.
Yeah. Also incorrect. Yes, it is. So do you eat there very often?
I wouldn't say very often, but if anybody knows Northeastern New Jersey and the options for paleo dining out, it's pretty darn limited. So we do eat there. I'm going to say, I don't know, once a month, definitely more often if I'm in kind of a crunch time for, you know, book editing and I'm not cooking as much, or, you know, right before we went on vacation, we had it. And then we had it again when we got back a couple weeks later, just because there wasn't food in the house or we were trying not to buy groceries. So a little more often like that. And, you know, we pretty much get like a salad bowl with meat. Sometimes we'll get a little bit of white rice, or Scott will get a little bit more white rice. And then I've stayed away from the fajita veggies just because I know they are cooked in soybean oil. Mm-hmm. And I usually do some type of meat that's cooked in the oil, but I just kind of try and limit my exposure there. So I end up doing a meat and then salsa and guac, and that's it. So what's the scoop on all of that? Is there something crazy about their guacamole?
This is just a question that I've had in my head for a really, really long time.
Like, is there crack in their guacamole?
Yeah. What is it? So, all right. I love Chipotle. I think it's a great option for people that are trying to avoid like bread and a huge hit of industrial, who knows what it is, and trans fats and all that. But you kind of run into landmines, I think, if you're trying to be perfect, which in my opinion, like, I go out to eat, I'm
good
making
luck.
Some concessions. Yes. Like, and at the most places that I choose to go, it's worth it. So for example, for me, it's kind of more important to me that I know like how my meat was raised and where it came from, just based on my experiences out here. So I get a little bit more picky about that. So I usually do something vegetarian at Chipotle instead of eating any of the meat. Like I don't do the meat at Chipotle.
I'm sorry. What?
I know. But I do. I do all the other stuff. Like I'll do sour cream and cheese, and it's
so
like
I can't eat that stuff. So that's not an option for me. So yours,
and I do the veggies too, and I do fine with that.
Okay, so your food ends up being more of like a high fat,
yes,
pretty moderate, maybe higher carb, lower protein for that meal.
Pretty much, I do I mean, this is like literally
do rice and beans, or
yeah, I do. People are gonna judge me for that. I had somebody on Instagram kind of upset about the fact that I do dairy, but which, by the way, I have a Is Dairy Paleo post on my blog, which is of course not a yes or no answer, but so yeah, I'll do the rice, the beans, and I'll do I'll do the fajita veggies. I do fine with that. Usually like seed oils will really bother me for some reason. These don't. And then like the different veggie options, the pico and all that stuff, sour cream, cheese, and a big thing of guac. But I also think about what the heck is in that guacamole that it stays so bright green.
Oh, they just make it fresh all the time.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm totally sure. They make it fresh, like consistently they're making new batches of it. So
it just goes that fast.
Yeah, and it's pretty loaded with citrus, which is going to keep it from turning. I mean, I can tell the texture of pre-made or blended with something else guac. It doesn't have that chunky texture. It has almost like a too smooth but somehow gritty, weird texture when you get it from
guacamole. Totally.
Fake guacamole, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, their guacamole is real. That's why it costs so much, because avocado is not cheap. And to be honest, you know, it is annoying to pay more for it when you don't get so many of the other toppings. Like if I'm not doing sour cream, I'm not doing cheese, stuff that wouldn't cost more. I'm kind of like, can you throw me a bone and give me a little bit of that guac? But they do give you, I mean, I want to say you're getting probably more than a whole avocado's worth of guacamole. Like it might be 1.5 or at least a whole avocado's worth, I would say, which
it's got to be.
It's a legit source of calories and fat there. So,
all right. Well, that's good enough for me. When I go to Chipotle, though, it's pretty rarely. If I was going more frequently, like if it was the only choice I had, I'd probably switch up what I get a little bit more. But that's kind of my treat, my dairy and rice explosion.
It's definitely one of our go-tos when we're touring and an event goes until 9 or maybe sleeps over until like 9:30, quarter to 10. So we end up at Chipotle literally at like 9:50. We run in like, sorry, we know you're closing in 10 minutes. Don't worry, we know what we want and we'll be quick about it. But they won't kick you out. But so yeah, we've definitely gone there a few times and it's no big deal. I feel all right eating it. And yeah, so decent stuff. But I don't know, was there anything else about the pork or about any of the meat? I mean, I think if people are worried about whether or not it's sort of perfect paleo or the type of meat and all of that, I do think that, you know, I feel pretty confident supporting their business and that they're trying to support farmers who have some better standards. It's definitely not your, you know, conventionally raised CAFO meat, even though it's maybe not 100% grass-fed or 100%, you know, perfectly pastured, et cetera. So I don't know.
I mean, I do think that they do what they can. And
to stop selling pork because someone's not meeting the standards, I mean,
that's something.
That's one of those things where it's like when everybody thinks that the choices they make every day make a huge difference in the economy of pork, for example, no. Like, great, support your local farmer. You know, if you can find anything locally, you're doing well and it's great for your health and for your budget and all that good stuff. It's great to support those farmers. But this type of decision is what moves the needle on what's happening out there. You know what I mean? Like, this mm-hmm. is huge. It's a huge impact on the supply and demand. If a chain like Chipotle says, we're not buying this, you know what I mean? Like, that makes a really big difference. So, you know, I think that that's kind of makes it a good thing for sure.
And maybe it'll get some of those people that get real angry when exactly what they want isn't available exactly when they want it, because they feel like they have a right to it when they walk into the restaurant. Maybe those folks will start to understand that food comes from somewhere.
Yep.
And we can't expect this constantly uniform, constantly available food system. I mean, I drive by 6 Price Choppers on the way to the city to record podcasts. And it's like, are we that blessed in, you know, our middle class area that we have that many stores to choose from? That's insane. And of course, like, we have this whole problem in inequity and there's food deserts and all that stuff, which was what, when I was working with Steve's Club, they were really talking about trying to get these kids access to really good fresh food. And that's a whole nother topic. But the fact is, food is not a uniform system. And to expect it to be a uniform system is really delusional, but also damaging. So even at this point, it is probably pretty much impossible for Chipotle to ever source 100% of its pork from perfectly pastured dirt hogs like right. we get out here. It's just not possible. But I don't know where I was going with that, but it is interesting that at least that they're driving the conversation a little bit more. So I don't know. Yeah, I was encouraged by it. A lot of people were kind of poo-pooing it, but I thought it was interesting. We'd like to thank Vital Choice for supporting our podcast today, and we encourage you to visit their online store at vitalchoice.com. You'll find an amazing array of some of the world's best seafood, including wild Alaskan salmon, halibut, tuna, and cod, as well as sustainably harvested shellfish. These foods are not only delicious, but vital choices for your health. You'll also find grass-fed organic Wagyu beef, live fermented foods to promote gut health, wild organic blueberries, and dark organic chocolates. Eat better, think better, and feel better with deeply nourishing foods from Vital Choice. They're offering our listeners 15% off any order using code BALANCEDBITES. Remember that orders of $99 or more ship free. All right, on to questions?
Questions, yes.
Questions. All right, this one I wanted to throw in just about a past episode because I was actually trying to find this episode too. And I know there was one that you did an interview, I believe, with an accounting person. I can't remember if I was on it or not. So we just thought we'd get this one out of the way. Jen says, I have a question about a past episode. Didn't you do an episode very early on that was all about education with at least one guest and you even talked about accounting issues? Does this sound right? I'm trying to find it so I can listen again. And in honor of all the work you're doing on building a badass business, I thought maybe you'd want to shout this one out again.
Definitely. So I just did a little searchy search through the archives. So before I tell you guys this episode, just a heads up, on balancebites.com, if you scroll over podcasts in the navigation, you can see where to find show notes and transcripts for every episode. But then below that, you will find the archives by topic. So if you're looking for, you know, business discussion or anything like that, you can do a little, I don't know how it works on a PC. I don't speak PC. I only speak Mac. I'm sorry. But if you can, if you hit Command F just while you're looking at the screen and you just do a little search or find on that screen for business, you'll see all the times that the word pops up on the screen. You can also do an archive search by episode. So it's not an additional search function within my website, although you can search the site and just type in like podcast, you know, business, accounting, whatever words you want to put in there. But I think just searching the archive page by topic is a really powerful way to find what you're looking for. And also the shows are collected up by topic. So if you go in there and you look under, for example, you know, nutrition coaching or education, you'll see a bunch of different episodes where we've talked about it and the general gist of whatever that question was. So I think folks maybe aren't aware that that exists. So definitely check that out on balancebites.com. So anywho, the episode she's referring to is number 92. It was with Jessica Mishra, who's a really good friend of mine who lives in San Francisco. And she started a program that was called Simplify and Organize Your Finances. So if somebody's looking for help with taxes and all that good stuff, I believe she's also taking one-on-one clients now. So she's a CPA, certified public accountant. She is, you know, able to help people. She's based in California. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. They're trained in how to handle things across different states, but you can definitely check out her information. I want to say, I don't remember what her business, her new business kind of entity website is, but I know her main website is beamingwithhealthsf.com. So beamingwithhealthsf.com. You can check that out. And I'm sure there's info on how to get in touch with her if you wanted help with your business stuff. So that was that one. Was there another question in there? That was the episode. But we've talked about a bunch we've talked with a bunch of other folks about nutrition coaching, and we've talked, you and I, on multiple episodes. I think I'm going to actually search that page myself. Nutrition career advice is what it's listed under on the podcast topics archive. And it looks like there's over 10 different questions that we've answered on it over the course of maybe 6 to 8 different episodes. So can check all those out. You can also just kind of click and link over to the transcript and read the specific question that you're looking for. So all kinds of good resources for you guys.
175 episodes.
I can't even believe that.
250 big ones. I don't know. But it's working out for me. I can tell you that. All right. You gave me a turby twist.
I did give you a turby twist.
I mean, hello.
If all that's right. Not the ultimate let's be friends gift, I don't know what is.
I don't know what is. My goodness. All right. This one is from Kristen. I don't love the taste of cooked coconut oil. I love the way it smells before I cook it, but after cooking, I can't stand the taste on my food. So is subbing with butter or bacon fat for most recipes okay? And I threw this one in here because I think we've talked about this before, but maybe we can kind of give a really direct answer for what type of saturated fat is optimal for cooking just across the board. And given that we have actually an option for coconut oil that is steam deodorized from tropical traditions, I tend to steer people that way. Because I just really like the idea of cooking with the more highly saturated fats, the coconut oil, the ghee. I like the butter and bacon fat thing, but I do think it's best to cook that at a little bit of a lower temperature. I don't know how you feel about that, but especially with bacon fat, people tend to just save it and cook with it over and over and over again. And you do kind of elevate the risk of oxidation when you do that. So Tropical Traditions does have a steam deodorized coconut oil. I think it's just, I don't know, if you look at the listing for it at Tropical Traditions, it should say something about it, the coconut smell being lifted. So yeah,
I know we talked about that one pretty recently too. And, you know, her question in short is just, is it okay to sub those? Yeah, it definitely is okay to sub them in. If you're baking, it's different. So, you know, the texture of the different types of fats will change the texture of your result when you're baking, which is why I don't bake, because it's just way too complicated for me. But, You can absolutely use, I think throughout Practical Paleo, I said, you know, either butter or coconut oil or something like that, wherever I kind of listed a cooking fat, it's generally fine to swap them out. You can even, you know, just kind of go based on the flavor and the taste of whichever you prefer. And yeah, I would keep the temperature, you know, a little bit lower if you're doing butter versus ghee, for example, where if you've removed the dairy proteins from the butter, you're going to have a little bit of a higher smoke point on it. So I think ghee is the number one fat I've been cooking with. I love Tin Star Foods ghee. She just has a really nice product. It's made from Kerrygold butter. You can definitely make it yourself. There's a how-to sort of recipe deal in all of my books, actually, so on how to make it yourself. But if you don't want to, or you just feel like you're not successful with it, I know she also strains it. I want to say she strains it 3 times. So people who are really concerned about being reactive to casein can go ahead and use it. And I think they're going to be just fine. But yeah, if you don't love the taste of coconut oil, then just don't use it. No big deal. And pick another fat.
See, I just don't approach it that way. Because I cook differently than you do. If I'm burning damn near everything.
And I also don't reuse those fats. Like where you were saying, you know, people reuse. I cook it once and then, like if I cook a steak and some ghee or bacon fat, whatever was in the pan, I dump on top of the steak when I eat it. And I kind of use it as a sauce.
I guess I could be doing that a little bit more often too, though.
It's pretty darn yummy. I actually was just grabbing one of my books from a pile here. If people are looking for cooking fats recommendations, I'm pretty sure I have this chart in all three. I know it's in Practical Paleo and it's in the Sugar Detox books. I don't think I have this in Mediterranean, but just kind of a high level view. But in Sugar Detox book, for example, I know I have fats and oils guide, and then I kind of give like a little brief overview of which ones to choose for cooking, and coconut oil is at the top of that in terms of, you know, which is the most ideal. So you can kind of just check that out in any of the books you have. If you have my books in front of you, it's all there ready for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this one is from McKenna. She said she's just joined a CrossFit box. Any tips for us first time CrossFitters? Thanks. Oh, McKenna. We have many, many tips for you. What are your main tips?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, so I think
you can't just join a box, by the way, and show up and work out. It's like you join a culture when you join a CrossFit box. So it's like you're going to get nutrition information. You're going to get at this point, I'm guessing you will.
It really varies by the gym. Some of them are really gung-ho on nutrition. Some of them are really random. So a couple of tips. The first one, you know, hopefully you were put into some kind of beginner's class and essentials and elements of something like that. So, you know, I think my tips are mostly around mindset because that's probably the toughest thing to overcome. So the first one would really be to just kind of trust the process and go with it with the whole intro thing and you're a beginner and don't get freaked out by what everyone else is doing in the main class. I know this happened just this week. So we've got a new class, you know, it's mid-January and lots of new folks in the gym, and they came in for an intro class. And I think they have 6 at least that they have to go through, but they finished their class early and we were finishing our workout in the main class with 1 minute left. And our coach, sometimes he gets a little intense and we know what to expect. But he turned the music off and was just kind of like shouting, which that's Big J. Like, we love him. He's super motivational, really pumped up to get everyone excited about their life and just kind of going and whatever. And it was the last minute of the workout. And, you know, these 6 people or however many were just like, what just happened? You know, like totally freaked out about it. But I think it's really important to just remember that the people in that part of the gym have been doing this for a while. And, you know, once you get to the point where you're introduced into the class, you still don't even have to worry. You know, I know there were a couple of new people in our class who were off to the side with another coach in the class. So they weren't even doing exactly what the rest of the class was doing because they were still, you know, they were in the regular class, but still pretty new. So just, you know, don't get yourself psyched out. Ease in with the process, ask questions when you need to, you know, don't worry that you don't know how to do something or you can't remember what's a jerk and what's a clean. I mean, I think it took me 3 months at least to be like, oh, okay, that's the difference. Like literally those words when you first start CrossFit are just beyond confusing, or maybe that was just me, but I think it's pretty much everyone who first starts. So that's a couple of things. The other thing too is, you know, it's important to listen to your body, and you know, you are going to be really sore the first couple of weeks. I was really sore last week, my first week back at the gym, and probably close to a month of sort of not training. And just after one not that intense workout, I was really sore for many days. And that's going to happen to anybody who's new. You don't want to get discouraged by that. You know, you don't have to beat yourself up every time you're in there. But if you're not used to this type of workout, you are going to be sore. If you're coming off the couch, you're going to be sore. It will go away and you won't be that sore all the time as a result of every workout. But if you are feeling like you're getting injured, there's a difference between working out and getting sore and just having your muscles repair, and that's kind of a normal process. A difference between that and like a joint or a tendon or something that feels like it's, you know, stabilizing you, feeling unstable or in a bad kind of pain. Do you know what I mean, Liz? Like, You're feeling pain in the workout because you're just not used to doing that thing, or you're feeling like, oh, this might be an injury. I think it's really important to tune into that and not push yourself when you think you might be injuring yourself. Those are a couple of things, but I think, I don't know, what else is on your mind about being new to CrossFit?
I think there's kind of, like with any gym, there's this flame out tendency. For some people get really, really obsessed with it, get themselves injured, have to sit out for a long time, then they come back and the same thing happens over and over again. I can name actually a couple of those that ended up opening their own CrossFit gyms, which is a little bit unfortunate. But I think that the idea of working to your capacity is a wonderful idea, but I think there's definitely, it's definitely worthwhile maybe just to be really, really aware of your body mechanics. And you may not know how a deadlift is supposed to look or how it's supposed to feel at that beginning, but really, instead of just focusing on getting that weight up, really focus on everything that your body's doing, the way the hinges are working, the muscles that you're activating and feeling these exercises in. And you should get coaching on that, obviously, but don't just kind of follow the coach's cues and do it, but just really, really focus on everything that you're feeling, because that's how you're going to get that neuromuscular memory really set, and you'll kind of be able to progress a little bit faster from there. But getting all of those cues down, I think, is really, really key, especially if you get in that mentality where you want to ramp up the intensity, because it really is technique over the amount of weight that you're able to move or lift. Yes. That's what's going to enable you to do it for the long term and actually get some results that you're wanting. So,
yeah. And I think even for me, one of the biggest things that I always keep in mind is that, you know, as much as we have friends at the gym who maybe are consistently kind of around the same strength or speed or whatever, so we might compare ourselves, just be like, oh, what weight are you doing on this workout, just to gauge it. I think it's really important not to compare yourself to other people in that way. So when you come into the class, and this is a big one for guys, they're going to start a workout where there's snatches involved, for example, and you are not going to lift as much as the girls in the class because they've been doing it for a year or 2 years or three, and you're new and it's a complex movement. And so I think just kind of checking your ego at the door, even though people think that CrossFit is such an ego-driven thing, like in some way, everyone in that gym has a weakness. Even the, you know, the best competitor in the class might actually not be as good at one skill as you are. Like, you might come in and just be somehow, you know, you're like a master jump rope person and they just can't figure it out. You know, there's so many different things we do in there and you just aren't going to be good at everything, but you'll surprise yourself and you'll be good at certain things. And I think that that's kind of it's a fun aspect of CrossFit. One other thing I kind of thought of was, if you're feeling like you're not getting it and it's really frustrating and you're struggling too much, there's always the option, I think, at most gyms for one-on-one training, which you can do that kind of in addition to coming into classes. So if you start out, you go through all the intro classes and they say, okay, you're ready for class. But if you feel like you're really not, you know, look into the idea of either one-on-one or maybe two of you can go in with a coach and just have a session, you know, once or twice a month where you just say, you know, I know we're in class and we're learning this over and over, but I'm feeling like I'm not really getting it and I want to learn more. So I think there are always aspects of different things we learn in life that we're willing to do that for. But sometimes for fitness, people just expect to get it or they think it's not a big deal. And I think to your point about paying attention to how your body's moving, I don't think everybody who comes to CrossFit comes from a background of being really in tune with that stuff. That was something that I was super in tune with from my previous, you know, work with a personal trainer where it was like so much body awareness and kinesthetic awareness is what they call it, but just like where your body is in space and what it's doing. And when the coach gives you a cue, can you follow it? Like, can you actually do what they're asking? And if they keep giving you the same cue and you're not getting it, I think that's a really good opportunity to invest some money in some one-on-one training so that you can get it, you know, get the attention that you need, because most gyms you will get a good amount of attention, but I can't speak for all of them. You know, I know the coaches at our gym, there's a minimum of two coaches in a class with 20 people, but that's not the same everywhere. And, you know, you have to make sure you're getting what you need from it so that you don't get injured, so that you do, you know, progress in the right way and that you have a good time. I mean, at the end of the day, you're there to get in shape and, you know, be fit, but you really should be having a good time. So
that's if I could do it all again, I would say slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah.
Go three times a week, not seven. Do something you can realistically commit to doing for the long term.
Yeah.
And freaking eat, man. Because when people join a gym, sometimes they're also slashing calories, like slash and burn rainforest style. And the body is like, what?
Yeah.
Holding on to everything, not letting you make any progress.
Yeah. People think that, you know, a 10-minute workout isn't burning the kind of calories or using the same kind of energy that a much longer workout they were used to is burning. And that's fine for like a couple of days. And then, you know, a few days in, you're like, oh, wait, there's no glycogen stores left in my body. And I do need to eat more now because I've just trained and emptied those stores out. When I first started CrossFitting, I was so scared of CrossFit that I took it so slowly. And there were a lot of classes where my coach was like, Diane, I think you can put some more weight on the bar, because she was just kind of making fun of me. She's like, you know,
You're the only person in the world that's ever started CrossFit that way.
I was like, oh, I don't know. I came from this training world background of Czech practitioners who most Czech practitioners just like hate CrossFit. They're just so against it, which to me is crazy, because I'm like, you guys can just help fix all the people who injure themselves. I mean, I love both worlds. So I don't usually take sides on many things. And so anyway, I went into it really slowly because, I mean, I already knew how to squat. I was already able to squat probably below parallel with squatting weight. I think I had probably squatted up to body weight at that point, which, you know, now I can do that, you know, for reps, and that's not something that's as much as I can lift now. But at the time, I was pretty strong and capable of all these things. Like, I was training in trapeze before I went in. Like, I was pretty capable, right? But I was like, I think I'll take the lighter weight, and I think I'll just, you know, try not to kill myself. And I just really took it easy. And knock on wood, I really have not had any major injuries in, now it's almost 5 years of doing CrossFit. I haven't had major injuries because I'm not stupid at the gym. Like, I, you know, there are mistakes. I have dropped a barbell on my head. I don't remember how it happened.
My God.
It just kind of bruised, no big deal. But everybody makes mistakes and all that. But I think the whole ego thing sometimes pushes people to injure themselves, because instead of erring on the side of listening to your body and just backing off that day, you end up getting hurt, and then you're knocked out for several weeks or months if you injure yourself seriously. You know what I mean? I'd rather be annoyed that I have to sit out that workout, and that's happened many times, that something just kind of doesn't feel great, and I'm like, all right, this is my favorite workout, and I'm not going to do it because this thing hurts right now, and if I do this, I'm done for the next 2 weeks, you know? So I really think that that's a mindset that a lot of people aren't always willing to subscribe to. You know, they feel like they want to push through, or they feel the pressure of the classroom setting. You know, like I said, even in our classroom, our coach is very highly motivated, wants to push everybody, but at the same time, you know, has respect for the fact that if you came in there and you didn't sleep that great, or you came off of a trip and you just came off of an airplane, or whatever's going on in your life, like, you have to be responsible for yourself. And I think a huge majority of folks who are getting hurt, or, you know, things are going wrong, they're just really being irresponsible with their own bodies and all that stuff. So that's what I see. But okay. Congrats. Keep us posted, McKenna.
I'm sure that's exactly what she expected as an answer to her question. Bring tons of water, wear Lululemon.
I have so many more things to say about it, but we'll save it for another episode. Maybe she'll check back in with us.
Yes. All right. So this one is from Melissa. What are your thoughts on red palm oil? I just picked some up at TJ's and really don't know what to do with it. Every time people call it TJ's, I think of the episode of the OC where they all go to Tijuana.
I just love TJ. I love the adventurous spirit that Melissa bought this thing and she's like, I got this. I don't know what to do with
it. Now what?
Now what?
So okay. I really like red palm oil. There's some very significant sustainability issues. So really do be careful if you're looking to buy red palm oil that you are at the very least getting something RSPO certified. That's really important. I believe that's a voluntary, like not voluntary, but it's one of those certifications that I really hope means as much as I think it means. I do not think it means what you think it means. But I get mine from Tropical Traditions just because those people are crazy. And I pretty much trust that they're
crazy in the best way possible.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So,
I don't know.
Yeah. I like crazy people. I like people that are unafraid to put their views out there.
Yeah.
Even if I disagree with them, right, sometimes.
Stand up for what they believe in.
Absolutely. Right. I think that's what Facebook, I mean, this country is built on. Okay. So the reason I like it, I actually originally liked it kind of as a skincare food. So I take it now and then almost like a supplement. It's a little bit more saturated. So it does have to liquefy. It depends on what season you're in, but I used to take it and still do sometimes as like a little carotenoid tocotrienol supplement, which you can do that. You can also cook with it. There's a book called like The Palm Oil Miracle, I think, by Bruce Fife. I'm not sure if that's what it's called, but Fife, F-I-F-E, if you really want to look into all the cool properties about red palm oil. But it's got this really earthy taste, which I don't know. Maybe, Diane, you can give some insight on what earthy tastes pair well with. But I generally like it. Like if I'm actually cooking with it, it would be with something that's kind of a little sweeter, like a sweet potato bisque or butternut squash.
Oh, that sounds fancy. What?
I know bisque is just soup, right? Because that's pretty much my understanding.
Your purview is soup and slow-cooked food.
I like it. So that's kind of what I tend to use it for. But I just always really liked eating it as a skincare supplement almost. So if you just
weird.
I know because I'm just utilitarian like that. I just, if I need something, I'll just take it.
I love how different we are. We're so different.
Completely.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But you love to eat. That's the thing. As much as you're utilitarian about your ingredients and food and when you're on your own, but when we're together and we like go to restaurants, I mean, you're a good eater. You love to eat. So,
I mean, there are 3 to 5 meals in a day, depending on how much space your uterus is occupying in your body, how squished your digestive system is. There's no way that I can enjoy myself in all my nutrient intake 3 to 5 times a day. Like maybe 3 times a week.
It sounds like permission to eat more, which, you know, I'm always looking for that.
It's not. It's okay. Permission to eat tiny, miserable meals where you wish you could eat way more.
Well, maybe that is some information also for the folks who can't eat big meals all at once for different reasons. We've had a lot of questions about like gastric bypass and things like that. And maybe you're experiencing a little bit of what they're experiencing. No, I'm serious. I mean, it's totally different, of course. You know, anybody listening, like I'm not lumping you together, but I'm just saying it's a little bit of that experience.
There are times in life where it's appropriate for certain people to not eat 3 squares. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm in that place. It was the saddest day today when I could only get a half sweet potato and one Nyman Ranch apple Gouda brought to my body. It's a sad, sad time.
A decent amount of food.
Come on.
The red palm oil, 2 things. When I was cooking with it more, I really haven't used a lot lately. Just got itself out of the rotation. I was cooking eggs in it because I feel like eggs are pretty neutral. And so if the oil is going to impart some more flavor, I mean, now I've been cooking things in ghee. Actually, maybe I'll grab the red palm and mix it with some ghee and see what happens. I'll get
a lovely colored
egg. But I do also have a recipe in Practical Paleo for a tuna. It's a grilled tuna that you brush with the red palm oil. And it actually gives it kind of a neat color because I don't know why I did that. I think I was just trying to come up with a fun use for the red palm oil. I did do a roasted garlic in red palm oil, which is another nice use for it because the garlic is so mild when you roast it, and it does have a really nice kind of buttery, nutty flavor to it. And I think the red palm oil works well with that. But on the tuna recipe, if anybody's grilled fresh tuna, it goes from this amazing bright red color to like a gray color, which I don't know about you, but gray food is not my thing. So brushing with the red palm, it's just weird. It's like, how does it go from bright red to gray? I don't know. Anyway, brushing it with the red palm oil gives it kind of an interesting look. And then you're using some seasoning. So you can check out that. I think it's called red palm and coriander tuna, something to that effect. So that's a good one to try out. But that's kind of my thought process there. Maybe you could probably cook some chicken, like if you were doing a chicken satay or something Thai flavored, I think the flavor might go well with that, especially because something like a Thai, Thai sauces and curries or like a satay sauce are pretty strong. So I think the red palm will stand up to that flavoring as opposed to something that's much milder. So that'll be another possible use.
Cool. Have fun with that. All right, this one from Danielle. I can't seem to figure out how to make bulletproof coffee that tastes good. Mine never tasted creamy. It's always oily. Any advice or tips? All right, so I wanted to answer this question, Diane, because if there is no bulletproof coffee, like not drinking it is not going to hurt anybody. So if you don't like it and it doesn't taste good, there's no reason to keep hacking away at it and try and make it something that tastes good for you. I mean, maybe there's some culinary trick that makes it into some kind of amazing velvety, you know, caffeinated mixture that is not to be missed. But to me, it's like, I don't know, I tried to make a latte the other day with coconut milk, totally burned out, not going to try it again. I'm done. Do you see a reason that people
nobody has to drink it? You know, the one thing I can think of with the way that she's making, I mean, if she's following the recipe, you know, the as written, here's what you're supposed to do, and you don't like it, then just don't make it. What I have done with coffee in the past, I don't think I've ever made it the, you know, approved quote unquote bulletproof recipe. I think I've just basically blended butter into my coffee if I want to, which is basically like butter in your coffee. There's no trademark on that. It's just butter in your coffee. And essentially, you know, it does become creamy and kind of frothy, but you have to blend it. So if you're just putting a spoonful of, you know, MCT oil and a spoonful of butter in your coffee, then the oil is probably pretty much going to sit on top. So I think that would be pretty oily, and it'd be like sipping broth that's just made where the oil is just sitting right on top. Yeah. But what I usually do, actually, I don't really make or drink bulletproof coffee. I do some coconut milk and I do a little bit of ghee, and then I blend that and it comes out fine. But I would just put it in a blender. I think that that might be the element that you're missing there. I'm really not sure what she's doing, but
would an egg yolk help? Like, is that why people are doing the egg yolk now? Does it help kind of grab the cream and
I have it? No idea, but I
the oil.
If you are blending an egg yolk into your coffee and it's hot, aren't you going to have a scrambled egg in your coffee?
This is where I checked out of the conversation.
Okay, like, there was I did see somebody taking ground up coffee beans and they scrambled an egg, right, in a separate container, and then they mixed the coffee into that, and then they took the whole thing and they simmered it in water to basically steep the coffee. But what the scrambled egg did is it acted like a filter where it stuck to all the coffee grinds. And then you could basically pour out the coffee without having a coffee filter. It was, I don't know, kind of looked like a kitchen camping
really,
hack.
Really tired.
I'm like, just use a paper towel or
but
I don't
then you
know.
Wasted the egg.
Right? What a horrible use of an egg.
We're not artificially lighting our chicken coop this winter, so we are like precious low on eggs, and I am just so grateful for every single one that we get. Eggs during the winter are a precious commodity.
Yeah, they're seasonal food.
Ugh. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So, okay, put it in the blender then.
Okay. Put an egg on it.
That's what it is.
Put a bird on it.
I do. I think we can shout out the Butter Your Broth ebook that my friend Kirsten put together recently. I talked about it on my Facebook page yesterday, but you mentioned broth. People that are doing broth, they're kind of bulletproofing their broth too these days. So she's got some interesting ideas in there. Her website is vibrantlifearmywife.com. Check that out. Maybe switch to some broth. How about we do this one from Daniela?
Okay.
Okay. Daniela says, I was wondering what I should do since I weightlift 4 days a week and high-intensity interval train 3 days a week. I'm going to start the 21 DSD on the 5th of January. Sorry, that was a little bit ago. However, the supplements I take are called Extend and First Form or First Formula, one after workout protein. I know you said no sugar, but I was reading through the ingredients in them and they have sucralose. But when I look at the sugar content, how many grams per serving, it says zero. So are these acceptable during the detox? These unfortunately are key to my workout routine on building and maintaining muscle. Also, my trainer says I need to eat some type of sugar after my weight days to feed my muscles. I usually do an apple. Is that acceptable? In your book, there wasn't a list of fruit you could have or couldn't. It kept referring to the yes list, but that didn't really say anything about fruit. The only thing I saw was green apples, same with complex carbs. Since I'm on a strict diet already, I have 3 meals out of 6 a day that require complex carbs. I usually do sweet potato or Ezekiel bread. So how exactly is this going to work with my current diet? Also, I've bought some protein powder called the Golden Ratio, and it's made out of peas and collagen. It also says coconut palm sugar is one of the ingredients, but it says 0 grams per serving. Is that acceptable? Can I tell you why I wanted to answer this question?
Tell me why.
Because in my opinion, I felt like this was somebody that is kind of chasing something and found the 21-day sugar detox and is piling that on to a whole bunch of other stuff that they're already doing. And maybe perhaps I was curious as to whether you would say that maybe the 21 DSD is not for this person, maybe at this particular stage in their existence. So I wanted to ask that.
On the heels of our previous two episodes, yes, I would agree with you. I think there's a couple things going on here, and I feel like that is, this is kind of a classic situation where, yeah, there's just looking for more and more ways to kind of restrict and refine and fine tune and dial in and all of that kind of minutia that I don't really love for people to do, especially somebody who's kind of at this intense level of athletic activity and training and all of that. I mean, I have energy modifications in the book for my athletes. And I even tell people who are training for, you know, a half marathon or a marathon, for example, don't take on the 21-day sugar detox at the same time as you're training for this race, you know? And if you always train for those races, but you really wanted to do it, I'm sorry, it's just not the right thing to do at the same time. You know, I can't stop people from trying, but I don't recommend it. And, you know, it's a program that I created and I've been putting people through it for almost 5 years now. So I think that there's a lot of experience I have behind that. And so, yeah, I would definitely agree with you. You know, she's not even really seeing in the book where there are allowances for fruit and starchy carbohydrates. So this is one of those cases where I would just say, you know what, just follow the program that you're on, do the workouts that you're doing. And if you're, you know, your trainer who you trust and you feel like you're getting good results with is giving you an eating plan, then that's what you should be following.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. This is why I think you're great, because I think you're swell. You have this great program, but you're very much like, look, this doesn't seem to be your focus right now. So perhaps
I actually
to look elsewhere.
Created the program and created different levels on it to try and help people who are like nowhere near where Daniela is. You know what I mean? Like really want this program to reach the people who are eating ho-hos and Cheerios and croissants for breakfast and donuts. You know what I mean? Like, that's really who I want this program to help. Now, you know, folks like you and I, we even get to the point where we're like, wow, I just ate that whole bag of dried mango. You and I have been joking about that for 3 years. And I always tell people, I'm like, you know that your other friends think that you're crazy when you say that a bag of dried mango was like an indulgence. You know, to them, that's a really healthy snack. And by all counts, it is a healthy snack. And I know that people can get themselves off the rails with, like, you know, paleo fed treats and all that stuff. I mean, everybody kind of goes crazy now and then if they feel like they are, you know, not living something that's more sustainable for them. And so whatever, it's fine. I don't have a problem with folks who are generally eating paleo, wanting to clean up what they're doing and liking having this set of rules and this program to follow. I'm all for it. That's what level three is for. But I really made the program to invite people who don't know what to do when they cut sugar out, you know, and are scared of fat, maybe. The program really starts to turn people on to eating fat and it not being scary or unhealthy. And those are the people who I most want to, you know, open the program up to and say, you can do this. You've been told that sugar isn't the best thing to eat all the time, but a lot of folks don't tell you what to eat instead, or they end up giving you a program that's just some kind of cleanse that, you know, it's not real regular food that you can keep eating forever. You know, if you, mm-hmm. if you end up on a juice cleanse for 3 days or a week, what do you do after? You know, people already, they want to know what to do after the 21-day sugar detox. And I'm like, if you think this is a tough transition, what if you did a juice cleanse for 7 days? Then you're like, I wasn't eating any real regular food. I didn't learn anything except drink juice. You know what I mean? And I love that the program really teaches people healthy choices and how to get their body to feel satisfied from different foods. But somebody who's really looking to use it as this like hyper fine tuning program, that's not the spirit of the program at all. So yes.
Follow the spirit.
Follow the yellow brick. No.
Yellow brick road. Okay.
Okay. I think that's it for questions.
Yeah, that's it for questions. But I have, can I ask a question for your kitchen tip?
No more questions. Is that a good one?
I'm thankful. That's good. So I'm going to ask.
The defense is wrong.
Sorry. Oh my God.
All right. I miss Marissa Tomei. Gambini. Where is she these days?
I don't know. She was in a Steve Carell movie recently that I really liked with Julianne Moore.
Oh, I think that one won a Golden Globe or something. Somebody did. I think Julianne Moore won a Golden Globe.
And Ryan Hottie. I don't even know his name. Ryan Gosling. He's Noah from The Notebook to me forever and ever. What was that movie called? Somebody's screaming it into their headphones right now. I can't remember. And Emma Stone was in it.
I just watched the Golden Globes. Did you watch? I feel like we're the Tina Fey and Amy Poehler of podcasting. Do you?
Except for I can't stand watching celebrities pleasure themselves at these stupid award shows. What? I can't do it.
I don't think we can say that.
I think we can say that.
Stroke their own egos.
Yes, exactly. Pleasure, service their own egos. I can't handle it. I love Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. I prefer like scripted comedy to people like trying to be funny and charming in front of an audience of their so-called peers. Although I did like the little part where they made fun of George Clooney.
That his was wife so, is so much perfect. Better than he is. That yeah. joke was amazing. And I was like, I love you, Tina Fey. You're my idol.
Anyway. I do love Tina Fey. I can't handle it. But then I worry that people are going to do something they're not supposed to do, like the Janet Jackson thing at the Super Bowl. I just, live TV scares the bejeebus out of me.
Oh, not me. Not scared.
Yeah, you're not scared. I'm not scared. All right. Here's my question for your kitchen tip of the week. Do meat and eggs need to be at room temperature before you cook them?
If they do, I've been doing it wrong my whole life. couple of things here. There have been rumors about, you know, bringing meat to room temperature before you cook it, just to kind of make it easier to sear perhaps. But I saw something recently circulating. I know you guys have heard me talk about America's Test Kitchen a lot. I know our friend Michelle Tam at Nom Nom Paleo is a huge fan of America's Test Kitchen as well. But they listed some information about cooking the perfect steak where you actually sort of, par freeze it. And I did not research that because
wait, par freeze it?
Yeah, you actually
like par boil.
Yeah. So you like partially freeze it. You freeze it for a few minutes. I'm not sure. I didn't look it up.
Is that what par means?
Yeah.
Are you serious? Par boil means partially boil?
Well, I don't know if it means, if it's like short for some kind of French or Latin word for just like ahead of time or previously.
Oh my God. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, like par baked pizza crust is like sort of partially baked. I mean, it's halfway baked or something. It's pre-baked, but it's not full. It's not done. So yeah. So you would freeze the steak ahead. I'm not sure for how long, but somehow I feel like the way that the water molecules in the meat change structure, it somehow kept it cooking better or more evenly or stayed juicy or something to that effect. This all sounds like way too much work for me. I'm not that much of a food scientist nerd in that way, where if I learn something, I'm like, that's cool. Good to know. I'm not going to do it, but it's good to know. Eggs, same thing. I mean, I've cooked them from cold pretty much all the time. When it matters to use either cold or room temperature eggs, tends to be more in baking. Again, let's not ask Diane questions about baking. Maybe we can ask Brittany Angel these questions, but there are times when using cold eggs will, I think, yield like lumpy results, because basically, let's say, for example, you use cold eggs and melted butter or warm butter or coconut oil. You know, as soon as coconut oil gets cold, it hardens up. So if you're like whisking eggs into something with coconut oil, then it becomes clumpy. So if you want to start with room temperature eggs for that reason, that could be beneficial. But I cook eggs from the refrigerator and no big deal. I think the other time that sometimes eggs aren't refrigerated is if you just pick them fresh from the farm and you don't wash them off. I think you can leave them unrefrigerated, right?
That's like, we don't refrigerate our eggs.
Yeah. So, but if you wash them, isn't there some kind of like protective thing that then you're going to have to put them in the fridge? I feel like Diana Rogers told me that when we were at
I don't know. I think Diana said something about that before. We don't wash them. There is some kind of protective coating, but I don't know.
I mean, that's, I keep my food in the refrigerator, and then sometimes I'll take meat out if it was previously frozen and defrosted in the fridge, and I feel like the chill on it is maybe even colder than the fridge because it hasn't like fully come down in temperature, I will take it out ahead of time and just let it kind of mellow out a little bit more. But do you have to? No.
All right. Whenever I'm cooking now, I think of questions for you.
Oh, goody. I like it, because I'm like, I don't know what's a tip, because I'm
just you don't know what
on
you
autopilot.
Know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, yep.
Well, do you have a homesteading tip for us this week, for all of us homesteaders?
Yes. So my homestead tip is get nipples. And this comes from a conversation I had with our friend Haley from Make It Paleo 2. She's getting some chickens, which is awesome. But I have found that the conventional normal chicken waterer is just a mess waiting to be made, especially with baby chicks. I mean, baby chicks will poop in their water. It's just a free for all. So starting chickens from the beginning with nipple waterers, or transitioning your older chickens to nipple waterers, is just a fabulous way to keep the water situation clean. You may have to kind of show the baby chicks how to use it by just pushing them up next to the waterer so they know how to get the water out. But get to nipple waterers. And you can YouTube, just make sure you YouTube like nipple chicken waterer, just for your own safety. And you can actually...
No.
Yeah,
safe, be careful. Okay.
Not safe for podcasts. But you can even make little tiny bucket waterers. You can actually attach these little nipple thingies to like a bucket, or like if you have just a few chickens, you can use little kids' sand bucket. There are a ton of different ways you can do it. We use those big old buckets, big old farm buckets. But there you go. Okay, so that's it for this week. Find Diane at DianeSanFilippo.com and join me at RealFoodLiz.com. Join our email list for free goodies you don't find anywhere else on our website. While you're on the internet, please leave us an iTunes review. We'd greatly appreciate it. See you next week. Bye-bye, baby. I'm sick of you.